Welcome to the Love Witch podcast, where we have conversations on sexuality, spirituality, and more. My name is Gwen Walsh, and I'm a sex educator, a tarot reader, a sexuality and spirituality consultant, and your host. Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Love Witch podcast. It's been quite a few months. Grad school has been very busy, but I am graduating in May, so that's really exciting. So I'm really looking forward to having this conversation today. I'm talking with Lindsay Nguyen, and she is the owner of Momotaro, which is a wonderful sexual health and femme care brand. And just for some context, Lindsay and I met at a Momotaro event that I was invited to last year in Brooklyn. We obviously connected on our mutual passion for sexual health and pleasure, especially for women, LGBTQIA plus folks, gender expansive folks, and generally people for whom pleasure has not historically been prioritized. But aside from that, Lindsay, my first impression of you was that you're such a genuinely kind individual, and I can really tell that you put that same kindness and care into your mission and work with Momotaro. So for the people who haven't met you before, could you tell us a bit about yourself?
Hi. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me, Gwen. I really appreciate it. And of course, thanks for the kind words. I think anybody who dives into sexual health and is talking about such intimate and personal issues, you definitely have to enter into this space with kindness, especially for folks like myself who, started companies like, ours and are in the space because of personal reasons. So you know how hard it can be to talk about this stuff and how judged you might feel. So yeah, that's kind of where we begin, right? I'm Lindsay Nguyen. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Momotaro Apotheca. We are a certified organic vulvovaginal health company. And like I said, we started this company because, and just to dive in, I was dealing with recurrent yeast infections, UTIs, bacterial vaginosis, kidney infections. I mean, you name it, I've kind of had it. These issues stemmed from kind of what I thought was going to be a hot sexual encounter in a hot spring, which it's not. It's, full of bacteria and something I highly do not recommend you do. And were then exacerbated by the over-the-counter and prescription medications that I sought out to solve my issues. So from there, not only did I need to create the physiological solutions for my body, but I was thrown into an industry that I found really offensive. Like, I wasn't getting the care that I needed. I felt like the words that were used and just the options and culture around this were really stigmatized and super taboo. So again, like I said, beyond the products we made, we really wanted to influence the culture as a whole and really change the way people thought about femme care and taking care of their vulvas and their vaginas.
Amazing. Yeah. And I think that this is an especially important conversation to have because we've seen, in recent political addresses and just in history, the lack of funding for women's health research, for research on female bodies in general in academia. And so for myself, as someone who has kind of one foot in the door of the sex education sphere and one foot in the door of the academic research sphere, I really see the lack of these conversations, the lack of empirical research. And when we don't have that evidence on what is effective, for whom is it effective, under which circumstances, there can end up being this very large generalization of, oh, just try this because it works for most people, or just take this because it works for most people, or we think it does, or it's the best that we have so far. So I'm really glad to see you taking that really archaic environment and lack of research in this sphere and being more intentional about it, being more personalized with it, and offering something for folks that may have had a really physically and emotionally difficult time in this aspect of life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's crucial. Everything you said is dead on. It's funny you bring up kind of this like empirical data and the historical references there. I'm reading this book that if you haven't read, it's called Bitch. It's by Lucy Cook, and it's all about basically Darwinism and Renaissance and how it goes back hundreds and hundreds of years and how science has had this bias against women, female bodies, and how that has then now become pervasive across so many aspects of science and medicine, and of course, culturally, how we treat our bodies and talk about them. And it really does require, kind of turning the clock back and thinking about, like, okay, well, where did this start? Why are we talking about our bodies this way? Why are we so embarrassed? And it also takes a lot of internal kind of soul searching on, like, what does that mean for me? And so with Momotaro, like for us, like we don't use gendered language. And that was because I wanted to understand my body and what was happening to it, and I didn't have the tools to do so. And so we really are trying to create that foundation for folks like myself and just people in general to understand, like, what is it that you need? How do you want to go about that? Like, we say vaginal wellness is not one size fits all, and that runs true across a lot of ideologies, whether that's the social, the cultural, the personal, like we should have the tools and the power to make up our minds and seek care that really affirms us because we know that affirming care and trustworthy care makes a difference on our long-term health outcomes.
Absolutely. Oh, so I imagine some of this we might have already covered, but to tune into the Momotaro side of things, how was Momotaro started and how does it relate to, or how was it informed by your story, your experiences, the perspectives that you hold, all of that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we could dive deep on that, right? So, like I said, I got really sick. I had this new sexual partner, a new romantic partner who is actually still currently my business partner. kind of funny, but I got really sick, and it was months and months turning into years of not being able to resolve these issues. And my business partner is a microbiologist and sustainability expert. And so we sought out to be like, okay, look, this isn't working. We can do this ourselves. Like, why am I continuing to either go to the fem care aisle or even to my gynecologist and not really feel heard or find solutions that are addressing my issues in other ways, right? Like, you're given the same prescription drugs time and time again, which we know now is causing resistance. Both antibacterial and antifungal resistance. So, quite honestly, the medications that we've used now for hundreds of years have created these like super strains of bacteria and fungal that are not being addressed by the drugs themselves anymore. So we started to look at a lot of different methodologies, right? And there's a lot of kind of nose snubbing around when you begin to talk about natural and plant-based products, but there's a ton of science around them. So we looked at Ayurvedic, we looked at traditional Chinese medicine, we looked at Western clinicals, we looked at really progressive studies around individual ingredients that looked promising to create these like essentially like super products. So beyond the ingredients we used, we also were thinking about methodologies. How are you applying these products and when are you using them? So like for me and for anybody who's listening, when you have a yeast infection coming on, right? You like feel that first tingle and you're like, ooh, but traditionally we've really only had post-acute symptomatic methodologies, right? So you then kind of have to like wait out till you get those full-blown symptoms, or you can go to the gynecologist and they're able to like check, yes, an overgrowth of candida is present. But there's a lot of like in-between time there that's really uncomfortable. And, as somebody with a vulva, like, I don't want to think about it like kind of the way it feels in my pants, right? I don't want to think about itching, irritation, inflammation. I just like want to go about my day. And so that was a really big driver for us in terms of how we created these products and what we wanted to address around like kind of the cultural, or sorry, excuse me, the culture of vulvovaginal care. And so yeah, we talk about preventative care. We talk about even creating education, right? So many people are not aware of these issues or haven't had the ability to talk about them. So for us as a brand, we really take that seriously as it is our responsibility to help educate people around their vulva and vaginal health.
Absolutely. And to contextualize that, when we think about any aspect of health, physical health, mental health, even socio-relational health, I can't think of any area of healthcare in which someone would recommend wait till it gets to a crisis state before you pursue treatment or do anything for it. And so this idea of not only treating symptoms once they are acute and at a crisis level, but preventing, providing like sustained health and wellness care, preventative care, all of that is such an important aspect of vulvovaginal health and health in general that at least my age group growing up, there wasn't a whole lot of that. There wasn't a whole lot of how do you prevent these things from happening? How do you maintain your health in this sense instead of just, oh, this is what you have to do once it's already at a crisis state?
Yeah, gosh, that's so interesting. And it's funny after, you know, Momotaro is 7 years old now. And I've never really heard anybody say like crisis state, you know, and that's so interesting for me to think about because that's really what it is, right? It's affecting everything you do at this point. And I think that that really speaks to the like minimizing of pain that women experience within healthcare, kind of just in general. And I'm sure you've seen some of the studies that are coming out about, you know, the pain management meds that women receive versus men and things like that. And this is just kind of another notch in the belt of it's like, oh yeah, like we are expected to normalize these experiences and like be hush hush about them, which has detrimental effects on our mental health, I mean, physical and mental health. Like, we know that the mental health effects as they're associated with these symptoms can be incredibly damaging to our overall, you know, mental well-being and our relationships and even, you know, how we interact with the world every single day. And yeah, we're just kind of supposed to sit by and kind of let that be what it is. And it is, it's a hard thing to fight back against, right? Like nobody wants to be the like pick me of pain. Like, oh, actually my like yeast infection is really making me feel like shit right now. You know, it's the same thing with menstrual care. And I appreciate the conversations that are happening there as well with people being like, yeah, let's talk about menstrual leave. Let's like talk about not having to go to the office when it feels like an anvil is falling out of your vagina. Like, you know, so it's all moving in the right direction. And I appreciate the awareness around those pieces, but you know, I really encourage listeners to think about that piece, that crisis state and how we care about our vulvas, because you know, it's really serious and it can have overall long-term detrimental effects on our health if we're not like, you know, just even conscious. That awareness piece is huge.
Absolutely. And this is a bigger conversation that we have time for today, but again, just to highlight the importance of it, this is not just an individual issue, but a systemic issue. Just as a little personal aside, for those who don't know, I go to school in New York, but my self-employed insurance is based in Maine and I am a full-time grad student. So I am not making money. I'm spending money on school. And if something happens to me, if I get a UTI or a yeast infection or whatever, and I'm in New York, I have to pay full out-of-pocket costs to address that issue. And that can be $300 or $400 for a UTI, which is not something that you can wait on. And so there is a huge level of inequality. Like if you can't afford insurance, then they're going to charge you $300 or $400 if you get a UTI, which nobody does that on purpose. So again, just to kind of contextualize the importance of being aware of this and the inherent inequalities, socioeconomic inequalities, gender inequalities, racial inequalities, all of those things and how they all tie in together. Like this is not just a little tiny corner of an issue in the vast spread of healthcare issues, but it really does tie in to the entire tapestry, if you will, of healthcare and human rights and treating people with dignity.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. The socioeconomic piece is so huge for us, and we do a ton of philanthropic work to try and support that and support getting greater access to sexual and vulvovaginal care. You know, again, that's like kind of an offshoot, but it's we're working right now on trying to get our FSA so people can access these products through insurance as well.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it, and I just think because you know. The long-term health effects, like you said, you cannot wait on a UTI. If that UTI turns into a kidney infection, like that is life-threatening. And why are we again looking at a post-acute symptomatic world? And that's kind of like goals for the future, right? Like if you can change the way people think about vulvovaginal care, like hopefully you can change the amount of infections that we are all getting because these things really are preventable. But we have to have the systemic support and education on the front end, you know, from puberty through childbearing ages to menopause and beyond about what's really happening in our bodies.
Absolutely. So you and I, we are both people who have had kidney infections. I remember mine was so terrible. I literally could not walk. And so we are quite aware of the importance of all of this. But for folks who are maybe newer to this, why should we care about sexual health and fem care? What does that mean? What are some of the areas that it covers that people may not think about? Let's talk about that.
Yeah. I feel like it's always important to go to the 101, right? Like we're so deep in these spaces that you can often go like, and, you know, talk about all these niche topics, but at the end of the day, sexual health is really truly part of our everyday health. And it doesn't just mean having an infection. It also means like, how are you engaging sexually with a partner? I mean, this is pain to pleasure. This is getting a pap smear to masturbating. All of these things are part of sexual health. And so understanding our bodies is really kind of like, again, this 101. What does it feel like when your vulva is like normal? What is your normal? Like, what does your discharge look like? What does it feel like? What does it smell like? All of those things can overall inform your relationship with understanding whether you are healthy or not, or potentially getting to an infection place. But beyond that, you know, not having stigma around these pieces also allows us to explore them further. So when we talk about like, say masturbation, right? Like we encourage masturbation, you know, before potentially a partnered sexual debut, because it helps you understand what you like, what you don't like, how to say no, how to encourage pleasure. And that allows us to have better relationships with our partners. And it creates understanding around consent. Say you're in a heteronormative relationship where, you know, a lot of people, and we're talking about consent quite often, and, you know, boys are not learning at a young age what that is. And I do think it's important for us to, you know, understand how to ask for things and say no. And that's all with regards to pleasure. And again, masturbation is a really great place for that to start. You know, beyond that, like taking that. So say you are someone who has had a sexual debut and you are sexually active now or are occasionally, that puts us at a higher risk for potentially infectious disease. So you do have a higher risk for bacterial vaginosis. You do have a higher risk for yeast infection. So are you going to get your pap smears? Have you been to the OB-GYN? Like that all again comes with destigmatizing care around these things and understanding when to reach out for this care, when we should begin to normalize these procedures, et cetera. And so it really is all related in some way, if you think about it, and can be sometimes quite linear, sometimes not, right? Like, you know, you begin to be sexually active, you get a pap smear, et cetera. You know, begin to think about reproduction, you're, you know, testing your hormonal health, all of those things. And I'm really grateful again for people like yourself who are educating on a myriad of these topics because it really requires talking about them and creating entry points for all different types of folks because, you know, masturbating to understand your pleasure might resonate with some, but it might not resonate with others. Whereas like, oh, okay, I'm thinking about you know, potentially having a kid and how do I do that? And da 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 might, you know, again, resonate with someone else. And so we're really trying to put together a network of understanding. So there are a lot of different entry points into sexual health and vaginal care.
Absolutely. And I mean, as an educator, surprise, surprise, this is my perspective. I think that it's so important to make sure that people are informed as much as possible so that they can, maybe it's weird to use the term informed consent in a broader sense, but I think that it really does apply to everything from, like you said, what you enjoy pleasure-wise, advocating for yourself in a relational setting, a medical setting, and really, you know, with your healthcare, with your pleasure, with every aspect of your life, really taking that extra step to be as informed as possible and to determine what works for each individual on a personal level. For one person, you know, having a very ornate regimen of, you know, care for themselves and vulvovaginal care may be very fulfilling for them and may really work for them in terms of preventing that acute state of symptoms. And for other people, maybe they just need a check-in every once in a while and that feels good for them and that's sustainable for them. It really is not a one-size-fits-all thing. And while there are, you know, treatments and products, whatnot, practices that are evidence-based, it is really important to consider for whom are those effective? Because, you know, if we think about something more topical like skincare, some folks need to go on Accutane. Some folks need to wash their face twice a week and that's good for them. And so everyone really is different in the level of care that is effective for them to maintain their health and well-being. So I think that having these conversations and taking an extra moment to think, what do I need based on what my body is like, what it needs, what it's asking for, listening to oneself, all of that I think is so, so important.
Yeah. And also that it can change, right? Like what you need one day might be very different than what you need another day. And I feel like we live in a culture where there's like a lot of like black and white absolutism, like this is it, this is the one, this is the cure all, da 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 da. But it's what you said is so important, is that like, if you're somebody who is interested in this topic, be it because you've had personal experiences or because you want to create a, you know, fulfilling sexual wellness routine, or that's going to potentially open up doors for you to better understand what you need pleasure-wise. Say you're afraid of touching your vulva and you want to work on like, you know, self-massage. There's a ton of shame that can come, like that we inherit, whether it's from religion or our parents. And again, we don't need to dive into that, but like, there's so many ways we can start to create like a supportive network, be it as a friend, within ourselves, within partners, just by educating ourselves. And, you know, we also think a lot about how like we're kind of these like quote unquote like sex people, right? Like people who are like into it or they're not. And really, everybody is in some way or another, right? We all have a relationship to sexual health and reproductive health at some point in our lives. And so just adding a little bit of education where you can, when you can, so you can show up, whether it's for yourself, partner, or family, like, you know, is the most I could ask from folks. If, you know, they're new listeners or maybe not someone who considers themselves into quote unquote a sexual health.
Absolutely. So jumping off of that, how does sexual health and pleasure connect with other aspects of life that we can quite easily associate it with the medical space? What else does it impact that we might not even think about?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really great information out there that has told us that our sexual health, you know, as it relates to kind of has these psychosomatic effects on our overall health, right? Like if you're somebody who has experienced any chronic health condition in any way, be it sexual or not, you know how that can have such a dramatic effect on our overall confidence as a human being, or our ability to get up out of bed and go to work, be it from the chronic pain or again, those like pieces of confidence and depression, I was at that point where I was like, oh my God, I don't know what to do with myself. And it made it really hard for me to go to work. You know, that worked out because I changed my work and now I do this full time. But I just think, you know, there are so many systems that it relates to. Again, it, like when you think about getting out of bed physiologically, and if you are uncomfortable, you know, that's going to affect your performance at work. And so destigmatizing and helping the larger system that supports humans as we go throughout the world, I think is so important. You're like, okay, like this is where maybe our healthcare as it relates to the jobs we get, right? Like what type of insurance does your job offer? What type of paid sick leave does your job offer? Like, do they have, you know, vulvovaginal care products in the, you know, say women's bathroom at work, things like that. Like all of that ends up having a larger impact on how we think about and care for our sexual health. And it, beyond people that have vulvas, it affects how, say, you know, men and people with penises would treat us potentially, right? Like, is this a men and women's issue? Is this a men and women's bathroom, et cetera? This is why we choose to use like anatomically correct language so that we can create greater access and like better understanding culturally around these issues. So like when we are outside of, say, intimate conversations and having these, you know, kind of, I guess, self-diagnosing understanding of our own sexual health, we don't feel such a large barrier to entry, kind of like in the world in general, like culturally at work or with friends, et cetera. So, you know, I think that there's a lot there to be said that it doesn't have to be this, you know, this super personal behind closed doors things, because again, there's so many places in the world where you encounter kind of these like second and tertiary aspects of sexual health. You know, this is where you get into the political conversations as well about LGBTQ rights and things like that.
Absolutely. And I mean, as people who are under the umbrella of sexuality professionals, at least speaking for myself, I got into this space because I wanted to help people feel educated and confident and equipped in order to, you know, address these really personal aspects of life with confidence and competency, and to be able to communicate effectively about them instead of feeling that they cannot communicate and they cannot therefore get their needs fulfilled. So I think that when we relate to these, if we want to call them intimate aspects of life, it really, I think, speaks to how do we address very personal or private or, for lack of a better term, nerve-wracking things in general. And so not to blow this up too big, but just to kind of see how this all relates, like the ideas of clear and effective communication, advocacy for oneself and others, and self-worth, and recognizing like, oh, if I am in pain, that is not normal. When unfortunately, especially folks who are socialized as women, are often taught to minimize their own experience of pain, or their experience of pain is minimized by medical professionals. And that has huge impacts for the way we perceive ourselves in general, whether that's our salary or whether that's the way that a partner may treat us. And so nobody has to become, as you said, like a sex person or whatever the term was that you used.
Yeah.
We don't all have to become sex educators or sexuality professionals, but being able to touch on these aspects of life and address things that we may not have the utmost comfort and confidence with, but be able to look at them and say, okay, my pain is real and it's valid and I deserve to get adequate healthcare for that. My needs are real and valid and I deserve to communicate them, whether it's a need in a relationship, a need at work, at home, whatever. And so even the things that are not directly tied to sexual health, there are implications for the ways that we treat those intimate aspects of life and how they apply to other aspects of life in general.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's a really lovely way of putting that. And I maybe sex person is kind of crude, so I apologize.
Oh
But
no, maybe I made that up, so who knows?
No. I mean, that's truly how I feel. I'm like, okay, there's these people who are like comfortable, who can talk about these types of things, and there are people who can't. And that is not their fault, right? This is coming from hundreds of years of systemic bias against women, people who are socialized as women, queer folk, whatever. I mean, it's so pervasive, and like that binary understanding is not uncommon. And so I talk about this a lot because I don't want it to create barrier to entry. Like, if you are somebody that does not think that they have a well-rounded understanding of not only their own bodies, but like sexual health and pleasure, like that's okay. Like, I would go as far as to say that that is almost the norm. Like, we are also in a time where we are seeing so many political and cultural rollbacks of inclusive care that like it's like the veil is almost going back up on a lot of this stuff right now, which is really, really sad. And so it does require some personal attention to detail and some discovery around this, and I'll like vague kind of stuff, right? Our sexual health, our pleasure, our pain, our reproductive health, our intimate romantic health. Like, you were not given the tools for the most part. It like if you are listening to this in the United States on so many of these topics. So like, don't feel sad, don't feel shamed. Know that there are companies like mine and people like Gwen who are like really trying to create tools and a better understanding. Because you're not alone, and this bias and this lack of education, it really, it was on purpose.
Yeah. And I mean, thinking about like part of my research in my lab at school is on sex education standards for particularly middle and high schools in the United States. And it is wild. There are public reports for folks who are interested in looking this up. There are public reports, I believe, on the SECUS website, SIECUS, where you can see state by state what the sex education guidelines are. And the wide variation state by state, because there is no, I mean, SECUS has the National Sex Education Standards, which are the ideal in their perspective, the ideal comprehensive sex education curriculum. But that doesn't mean that every state or any state adopts those things. If you happen to be a child in a school in Alabama, you are going to get a widely different sex education curriculum than a child who goes to a school in California. And even for myself, I went to a Catholic school for middle school. So our sex education was, won't get into it now, but if anyone's interested in hearing the story, you are welcome to let me know. And maybe someday I'll do a podcast episode on that, but it was not good. And so absolutely, like, I feel like I mention this a lot, at least in personal conversations, like getting mad at ourselves or emotionally punishing ourselves for not having this education. That's just hurting ourselves twice. So, absolutely, if you can be kind to yourself, please do that. Take that approach because that's going to be a lot better. There are so many resources that, thanks to the internet, many of us can access in the comfort of our own homes and privacy. And so, whether that is, I know Momotaro has a blog, and there's so many articles on various topics that you can read about there. You can pick and choose which topics are interesting and applicable to you. There are websites like Secus's website. For younger folks, there's like Planned Parenthood, Scarlatine. We used to recommend those resources for folks who were underage who couldn't come into the sex toy store that I used to work at. So there's so many valuable resources where folks can learn about these things, but it's understandable if it's a bit overwhelming. So absolutely take it at the pace that works for you. And hopefully, it can be kind of a positive snowball effect of continuously learning, getting educated, gaining confidence, and again, Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither was a confident arsenal of sex education if you didn't have one when you were younger. So be gentle with yourselves.
Totally. And actually, I think, if you can have fun with it, right? Like, this makes me think of what we were talking about earlier is like vaginal wellness and sexual health is not one size fits all. Like, you might read something that you don't like. You might read something that you love. And because of the nature of intimate and sexual health, that it is so personal, this is like a cool, discoverable moment. Like, I encourage you to go find those pieces and it will just, I don't know. I feel like my journey and my sexual health education and personal relationship with it has really, I would almost go as far as to say it has kind of changed who I am as a person for the positive. I feel like a better romantic partner. I feel like a better patient. I have the ability to advocate for and against the things that work for me. And that's really important, right? Like, cut out the noise and really find what works for you. And I think this could be really, fun and rewarding and spicy too. Like, it's interesting.
Absolutely. And I completely agree with you for my own personal experience. I know that going from being younger and really not having any sex education whatsoever, or even relationship education, other than Disney movies, which were not very helpful from an educational perspective, the way that I felt was just so uninformed, so embarrassed that I didn't have any knowledge. And it ended up kind of fostering these feelings of insecurity, of shame, of I don't even want to try because I don't know where to start. And going from feeling that way to where I'm at now, I feel this level of safety and competence and confidence communicating what I need, why I need it, where that comes from, and just this like awareness of myself that I'm now able to do that with confidence without worrying, oh, is my partner going to get mad if I ask for this, or if I say that I need this, or this is, a need for my healthcare or whatever. I'm not worried about it because it's just a normal thing to me. And if somebody doesn't like it, then perhaps they're not the partner for me. And having that level of safety and security and like being informed for myself allows me to expand into a place of creativity and play and know what questions to ask my partner, invite them to get curious about me and about themselves, and to be so much more creative and thought-provoking and fun, like you said. And so when we have that baseline, if even if we go back to like Psych 101, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that base of safety gives us the foundation to then move up into, more fulfilling relationships, self-actualization, all of the creativity and curiosity, and all of those really beautiful aspects of life that might only feel accessible, at least in a consistent way, once we have that baseline of safety.
Yeah, totally. I think that that's, I mean, in simplified terms, really special. Like, feel confident and sexy and hot and creative as you continue to take this journey. I mean, I think that's a really lovely piece.
Absolutely. So to wrap things up, our general hopes and dreams and aspirations for the future. So for this industry, the femcare industry, the sexual health industry, all of that, what would you like to see the industry become? Like, what changes would you like to see, and what do you hope to be a part of within those changes?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really touch on this, so I'm not going to try and dive too deep, but like the femcare industry has been riddled with like shame and stigma since the dawn of time, right? The word or the phrase itself kind of contains this like kind of like back aisle of your drugstore. You don't want anybody to see you're there. You're embarrassed that you're there. You don't even really know why you're there. And it has products that you don't understand. And they're maybe addressing things that you feel like you shouldn't. And so the industry as itself, I think we need to rethink it, right? Like femcare is actually vulvovaginal care, right? And so that could mean a lot of things. Like, femcare before felt like douches and sprays and washes that were meant to like purify and, you know, make the vagina or the vulva more palatable to the public, right? And we know that's actually not what vulvovaginal care should be, right? Like we're talking about women's health. We are talking about this like broader picture as it affects our overall health. And so that's what I would like people to see and understand with our company. You know, like we are addressing very real issues. Like we're not trying to put a bow on it. We're not trying to make your vagina taste better or smell better because we don't think it is any of those things. We are trying to really help you with quality of life issues, itching, irritation, inflammation, symptoms of bacterial vaginosis, yeast infections, UTIs, lichen sclerosis, issues around pregnancy, postpartum care, fourth trimester, menopause, vaginal dryness, like the list goes on. Like your vulva health is deeply connected to your overall health, right? Like we know there are symptoms that are kind of considered secondary if you say maybe you are going through cancer treatment or diabetes folks are more likely to have chronic yeast infections. Like, sorry, folks who have diabetes. Like all of these things are really, really important. And so why do we not try and create a space, whether it's in the drugstore, on the internet, or ideologically, that like feminine care is maybe a like kind of reductive idea around vulvovaginal health, you know, like let's talk about the real symptoms and the things that affect our lives daily, this discomfort. And that's really like the overall change I would like to see, that like you can address these things without thinking like, oh, the vagina self-cleaning and that's the be all end all of what it means to take care of my vulvovaginal health. Like I believe in that. And that is obviously very true, but like that phrase in and of itself, I think can be kind of damaging because then folks like ourselves who have gone through chronic health issues, you know, as it relates to our reproductive and sexual health are really like, shit, what do I do? Like, oh my God, my vagina is like not taking care of itself. I'm in pain, et cetera. So it's kind of long-winded, but we need to normalize symptom-based care. We need to normalize anatomically correct care, you know, so that we can access those things. Like what is a vulva versus like what is a vagina, which like is funny, we didn't even really address, but is like that 101 is missing. So we don't even know where to start. And, you know, that's my vague diatribe of a goal.
I love it. It reminds me of, so it reminds me of a couple things. First of all, this idea of the language that we have used versus the language that ideally should be used. So things like the more archaic language, the more archaic marketing versus the more medically and anatomically accurate way of wording things. And at least in the public health and advocacy sphere, there's this idea of like meet people where they're at in terms of language, not where you think they should be. Mm-hmm. But I would hope that we can kind of bridge those two so that we can help people to understand and use language that is applicable and accessible to the public, and also help to get the wheels turning on this is the language that for medical accuracy and equality, we should actually be using. And I guess an example of this that I also thought of was, I was on a road trip once and I think I was in like upstate New York somewhere. And I went into this grocery store and I will never forget seeing one of the names of the aisles and it was like feminine needs. And I was like, Oh no.
You're
Like
like,
this
oh.
idea of literally a needy feminine. I was just like, oh God, this is terrible.
Yes. Well, and think about how, like, that, just those pieces, like, would limit your ability to talk to, say, your partner. If you're in a, hetero relationship, I'm like, excuse me, sweetie, but like, I need to talk to you about my feminine needs. Like, it just makes me, it make, I'm like, oh man, like, this is going to be an uncomfortable conversation, is how that makes me feel.
I know, it just like I it's just, oh my goodness, the way that we think about things and the emotional connotations and the psychological connotations that we place on all of these aspects of life are just as important as the physical health care that we get. If we
Yeah.
are taught to think that, oh, you only go to the gynecologist when you have a problem, or if you are extra, quote unquote, needy, that's a terrible way to live life. Everyone has things that they need physically, emotionally, in every aspect of life. And we don't shame people for certain needs, but we seem to shame them for others. And that's really unfortunate. And I hope that we can get to a point where folks can feel confident communicating about these things. And again, as they gain experience, communicating, advocating for themselves in a relationship setting, in a medical setting, in a professional setting, all of these areas, that hopefully we can end up having more empathy for ourselves and for each other and create a more equitable world, say that 5 times fast, as a result.
Yeah, agree 100%. I mean, I just think it's we're I'd like to say we're getting there. This podcast didn't exist 7 years ago, so I'm very grateful for you, Gwen, and the time you take, and appreciate that, the industry is changing, and people are moving, I think, to an empathy forward model, at least in some spaces. And so I am looking forward to the future and hopeful for the younger generations that they will have better access and care than we did.
Absolutely. Now you've got me thinking, like, where was I 7 years ago? And 7 years ago, actually almost to the month, I had just started my job as a sex educator, like first sex educator job I ever had. And I really did not know anything. Like I had been volunteering at Planned Parenthood for a while, so I had the reproductive justice and a bit of the healthcare focus side of things, but I came into this sex toy store where I was going to be by myself all day, every day, educating people. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, can I do this? Am I good? Like, I was going through all the training. So clearly I was getting all the information, but it was more of a feeling of, do I have the capacity to support people in this way? Can I be capable of that? And I think it's really beautiful to see how much growth can happen in 7 years, and how much impact each of us can have in 7 years, or in 7 days, or 7 seconds. So, absolutely, for those of you who are sexuality professionals, for those of you who are just starting your journey in your own sexual health education, keep going, do it at whatever pace feels good and sustainable for you. And just know that we're only going to continue moving forward as we continue learning and communicating and all of that. So that is my hopeless optimist perspective on things.
Oh, well, I'll take that. What a wonderful way for me to start my day. That piece about 7 seconds, 7 minutes, or 7 years really resonates. And that, I think, for people listening, it really is that diverse, and how quickly you can have an effect, a positive effect on somebody's life as it relates to these issues. And Gwen, you should be so proud. What a wonderful journey.
Oh, thank you, Lindsay. Oh my goodness. All right. So before we say goodbye, is there anything else you would like to say to our lovely audience that is listening? Any ways that they can stay in touch with you, connect with you, any of that?
Of course. So we're millennial led, so very active on Instagram still. We are Love Momotaro. You can find us there. We are on TikTok as well. Of course, head to our website, momotaroapotheca.com. We do have a like chat bot, if you will, but it's actually not a bot, it's a real human. We really love to connect with people personally. And so if you have questions about your personal experiences, the products, et cetera, we love to answer them. Obviously, we are not allowed to give out medical advice, but we like to help curate and, educate people to have a more fulfilling experience with their sexual health and vulvovaginal healthcare products. So please do that. You can find me at lindsay@momotaroapotheca.com as well if you want to shoot us an email.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on, Lindsay, and for having this really wonderful and important conversation.
Awesome. It's my pleasure, Gwen. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Bye, everyone.